Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
In by Kulusevski.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and flick my penises, there's the breakthrough. It's Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
My impressively large collection of penises.
So, how did that happen? This is an AI on a video, right? On trying to work out what the commentator was saying when Perisic got a flick on.
Yeah, flick on by Perisic. I'm pretty sure is what he said. You've put me into a corner now. It's not really my screenshot. John McKenzie sent me the screenshot and said you can tweet this if you want. I was out. But I thought it was good content, but now maybe I've undermined its value.
No. I mean, basically, John deserves lots of credit, I think. So he's getting it here, which is nice. Yeah. Let's get straight into it. Bud, your voice is a little husky because you were enjoying the wolves.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I could do more games like that. It's August. August is meant to be a bit fun, you know. Football's not quite serious yet. People are still off the beach, are still settling in new transfers and stuff. And it was quite stressful. It was an end of, if it had the end of season, a lot of pressure feel to that game. And we're only three games in, and it shouldn't be like that right now. And we need to start scoring early just to make life a lot easier for everybody in the stadium.
Yeah, I think they're working up to peak fitness, so it will come. Let's start with the team selection. Nathan, Perisic in for Sessegnon, I guess not a huge surprise, and Sanchez covering for Romero.
I wanted something other than that. I don't know what exactly. I just want us to not be going into our second season going, if Romero gets hurt, we're going to have a Davinson Sanchez situation. And look, he was really good defensively again. I saw a tweet something about him, like it's been 7 hours of pitch time since we conceded with Davinson Sanchez on the pitch, right? That's not going to last. But he's a good defender, but he does defensive damage to us by lessening our ability in possession and creating a threat on the turnover. And just nothing happening up the right side of the pitch for a lot of the game. And again, we're going to have to talk about, you know, tactical context. I think Wolves set up really, really well, but exacerbated by you know, if we have Romero there, maybe we get to some earlier solutions in that game.
100%, agree. Yeah. So Wolves defended. They were interesting. I thought Wolves way more interesting than I expected. So they defended in a 5-3-2 shape, with Pedro Neto as a right wing back in the defensive phase, and they attacked in a 2-3-5 shape with Pedro Neto as an extreme right winger in the attacking phase. And the two who pressed did a really effective job, I thought. So it was Guedes and Pedence who pressed our backline, did a very effective job of shuttling the ball out to our wide centre-backs as much as possible and making them sort of play balls up the line, which they were then able to press and defend quite well. And they let Dyer have some of the ball from deep, but his passing was quite off kilter, I thought. Not that he had a great deal to aim at. So, yeah, I'm really, really impressed with Wolves' setup, I must say. I would say, similarly to Chelsea, they didn't cause us too many problems. The times they caused us problems were generally from our own making. So Bentancur got robbed on around halfway and Guedes burst forward and ended up having a shot just wide. Davinson Sanchez just let a ball bounce inexplicably and nearly caused a problem in our box. But really, we kept them at arm's length for a lot of the game, I felt.
There was danger. I think there was danger in that first half. I think they had some decent through transition attacks. Right?
More than
well, through possession, everything ended in a long shot from them because they love...
Because they've got Ruben Neves.
Yeah, mainly.
Yeah,
that.
there was a real fear in the crowd every time Neves got the ball. But does he actually score that many long range goals? I don't think he's like got even like a Tom Huddleston range. He scored a couple, but there was a genuine fear every time the ball was pulled back to him. Everyone was screaming, closing down. But Wolves, it was more like a suggested danger. I wasn't that scared. It's kind of like swimming in the sea, that it could be a shark or something knocking around, but it's not really there. So you can't see the danger. So you still kind of splash about. But it wasn't a real danger or real. There was that one header, but even that just came from situations that just occurred rather than sustained pressure or any kind of fear. The strange thing was that when Adama came on, there was in the stadium, there was a genuine like, oh, he still plays there. And every time the ball went near him, there was just screams of, just bring him down.
Amazing. Yeah, he was completely ineffective, as it turned out, right? He just
totally
sort of just did nothing, essentially.
It didn't stop the guy in front of me talking about how Adama oils up his arms. Is this a thing?
Yeah. To stop players grabbing him and putting him down, I guess.
He has a dislocation issue. He has a ligamental issue, I imagine, and some sore labrum thing in his shoulder. So he gets easy dislocations, and everyone's always grabbing all the time because it's the only way to slow him down. So he's constantly getting his arms ripped out of their socket. So he lubes up for shoulder defence.
He is glistening at all times. I really felt this was a game of two halves from Spurs in the attacking sense. And for me, that was most typified by Ivan Perisic and Rodrigo Bentancur. I thought Bentancur really struggled in the first half and he was very sort of lethargic. And in the second, it was almost instant. He was just straight out of the blocks, pressing really high, really hard, and led the press throughout the second half and led to our midfield playing at least 10 yards higher up the pitch, as far as I could tell. And Perisic, who, you know, he dug out an absolutely superb cross, as he does every single time, right at the end of the first half. But on the whole, in the first half, was pretty quiet. And to be honest, didn't really get close enough to Neto a few times and let Neto go past him. Defensively. In the second half, totally different player. Because we're playing higher up the pitch, he was able to run onto the ball in space and do some of his best work and had a really, really strong second half performance, I thought.
So I've moved seat now in the stadium. I've gone from the south stand. I used to be on the right-hand side, so I was the opposite side to Conte. So this season, I've moved to the left-hand side. So as I look straight in front of me, I have Conte at the touchline. So it's Perisic's side for the first half. And he did look like a 34-year-old wing-back. And I was concerned because you're right. There was a few times his man got past him. Who was it, Neto?
Yeah.
He went past.
Yeah, he's a good player, Neto. He's going to beat wing backs, right?
But it was too easy sometimes. Yeah. And then he was struggling to get up as well. And I was just like, I was concerned. But you're right. Second half, he was totally different. Whether his starting position was a lot higher, and he kind of bluffed his way a little bit through it, and he forced them back just by being higher. But the first half was a concern for me.
Really, really impressed with him on the ball. Maybe it's a little early. Maybe he's still because obviously his is his first start, so maybe not quite there, match sharpness yet in terms of his tracking back and his complete agility. But so definitely something to keep an eye on there.
But he was fantastic second half. He was unbelievable in the final third. He was a real threat. He caused problems. got himself the assist. He was great in the second half.
This talent he has for managing to get a cross in, and not just a cross, a really dangerous cross, from a situation where he is basically facing away from goal and is totally cramped by fullback. It is extraordinary. I don't think I've ever known a player able to do that in the same way that he does. I assume it is pure brute strength. I mean, I've seen his body. He is ripped. I've seen him doing various leg presses. I know that he has immense strength in his legs. It is so impressive, and like I said, they're all good crosses as well. Like, he hangs them up into dangerous areas that Kane is going to very much enjoy being on the end of, and Richarlison, I think, as well, who's another good header of the ball. I think there's a lot of potential there. I mean, that was definitely the Perisic we were hoping for, that we saw in the second half there. And I think Conte recognised that post-match. The other player who I thought had a really strong game was Kulusevski. I mean,
second half only, though, I would say.
Yeah, again, just massively improved in the second half. But he's just so good. He's so good. The way he gets his body between the man and the ball. I mean, he gets beaten up every game. He's constantly got players like hanging off his back, and yet he just ploughs on. And yeah, he's such a dangerous player.
I thought he was getting beaten up, and I was going to go in on the referee. I was going to complain.
100%. That's a good shout.
But one of our newest listeners, Rabin, he's going to appreciate the shout out. He messaged me after the game, and I said to him, this ref was a joke. And he said to me, do you know what? The referee was all right. He didn't get anything that badly wrong. And it's crazy, because I thought he was the worst ref I'd ever seen in my life. He was... I know referees are supposed to let things go now, but he was letting their fouls, letting their tackles go, but not letting ours go. So it was strange. And in my heart of hearts, I thought, this is comeback for Chelsea. The referees, they've all sat down. And they've
Jack
decided
said that. Jack said that on Bull the Roost as well.
Yeah, they're going to get us for all the kind of the wrongs we did last week. They're going to right it this week. And I was really upset with the referee.
He wasn't good. He wasn't dreadful. I've seen a lot worse, but he wasn't good. The officials missed some fairly basic stuff, like giving goal kicks when there should have been corners and things like that, which, to be honest, like, I don't know why VAR can't just correct that situation when it's really obvious. It seems silly to me. It would take seconds. But it was annoying. And you're right. The referee was letting things go that perhaps he shouldn't have done. It felt to me like it was against us a lot of time, although I'm sure that's not actually the case.
There was a moment with Harry Kane and Neves. I think Neves was already on the yellow, maybe, and he made a really strong challenge on Kane that could have been given, but the referee didn't give it. And then Kane touched Neves, and Neves fell over, and the referee, he was thinking, like, you could see he really wanted to do some damage to us, perhaps send somebody off. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, I don't remember that one. Do we want to touch on Son at all? It just seems to be not quite connecting so far.
I think it's, well, Southampton aside, I think it's been two games where the opposition have set up very well against us. I mean, he does go through these spells. Yeah. I don't think it's worth getting too worked up about. I understand that the situation is different now because of Richarlison. But again, I think that just means him coming on, 55 minutes even, if we want to do it that way. And how did you feel about him off the bench?
I think he's great. I think he just brings such good intensity. Yeah.
And I think that works for us that way. I think, have Son's threat and then have Richarlison's fresh legs and get Son the rest and everything else, and that works fine.
I really feel like it could work the other way around as well, though. You know, Son's the kind of player who can provide energy off the bench too, and I'm not saying drop Son. That's absolutely not what I'm saying. I think what we have to do is change our mindset and be a bit more like Klopp's Liverpool, where sometimes Mane was on the bench last season and that wasn't an issue. It was fine. You know, they got lots of good attacking players. And I think it would be reasonable for Son to have been on the bench in this game and to be on the bench in the next game. But, come on, be first sub and be first sub early as well. So he's still seeing plenty of game time. But, Richarlison looks really, really feisty.
Yeah, I think so. I just I'm probably having an adverse reaction to a narrative that's like, use Richarlison as a threat, teach him a lesson, make him apply stuff, which I don't really believe in at all, because I've got no doubt over Son's intensity, work rate, self-responsibility, drive, all of those things.
I don't think it's... I think it's almost a change in language. It's not dropping, it's rotating.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's fair enough to rotate out Son at this moment after he's gone three games without a goal. I don't think that's unfair.
What's the point in having another brilliant attacking player if you're not going to use him? I think, you know, Richarlison's cost us a lot of money. It's just, why not?
And I think those opportunities that Richarlison were getting were balls over the top. And had Son came on for the last 25 minutes, 30 minutes, he would have benefited off those.
Yeah. He's got such quick feet, Richarlison. I think we're going to enjoy him a lot this season. There's, a lot to come from him. Ivan Victor says, what did Conte get wrong and then get right in this game? What do you think, Nathan? Do you think he set up poorly?
So there's another question as well from Sunrenity. He says, has Conte's 3-4-3 been negated since Tuchel has shown how to do it? Wolves didn't set up in like the same way as Chelsea. There are a couple of similarities. So I retweeted a thread by Marty. So at MTJTZ_, but the retweet was recent on my profile, so check it out there. Looking at the two different ways, both in and out of possession, and he looked at how, firstly, it's worth talking about how Wolves blocked access into midfield very well and forced us out wide to our wing backs, where they turned the ball over pretty well there, which is a little bit like what we saw against Chelsea. It's hard because Davinson came in. It's hard to say, oh, you know, all teams are going to use this particular mid block against us now, and that's a problem. I think we need another couple of matches with Romero back in to begin to worry about that too much. But again, another thing to keep an eye on. What we did see, though, I think, is our pressing game exposed a little bit in this game. Wolves are individually very strong on the ball, especially with Neves dropping in and stuff like that. But, okay, let's go back to when we first brought Conte in again. I did that video when I said, look, he's not a park the bus and counter guy. He's not a high press guy. He's both. And I think that we also had questions at the time that, like, hey, Conte's been around. He's been doing this stuff for a long time. When are Conte's ideas going to be outdated? And largely the feeling at the time was, well, not really. Everything still seems to stand up pretty well. As, you know, just one Serie A. I think if there is an area where Conte is beginning to fall a little bit behind the best of the best, it's in that particular area. So it's he's something of a generalist defensively, right? He can set up deep for one game, he can have his team press high in another game, he can do a mid block in between. But where the very best pressing coaches in the world have pushed the envelope on high pressing, and not just high pressing in terms of pressing on the way to keeper, but also more sort of trap based medium high pressing, like you see with Liverpool and sort of more German managers generally, football has evolved in both the high press and the solutions to the high press. And I think that is an area where, yeah, can Conte coach a high press? Definitely. And we've seen that function well in 2.5 games, maybe. But he's not on the same level as Klopp, as Pochettino, as Guardiola, as Tuchel. And so maybe this season we'll see a trend of, and obviously teams are limited by the technical skill of their defenders, right? But maybe we'll see some really good passing teams draw us out and open us up, as Conte does to so many teams himself, right? So maybe that's something to keep an eye on. And I think Wolves did a really good job there. Or we just adjust and the two midfielders aren't quite so aggressive now. They support the press and we don't press as deep as defender and things work
but
out.
But I really felt like we were at our best in this game when the two central midfielders were the most aggressive.
It's risky. Yeah. I think it was really risky in this game.
Yeah, and I think you're right that Romero negates some of that risk because he can... Basically, he just moves forward with the press. He sort of gives up on hanging back.
Like a midfielder.
Yeah, exactly. He's a vibes defender, you know, like, and I mean that in the best possible way. He has a really good tactical understanding, but also just a good intuition for how the game's going. He knows when to jump into midfield and when not to. Sanchez is not going to do that. And if he does do that, he's going to take his man down and he's going to be clumsy about it. Romero is just so smooth. He just moves forward with the flow of the game. And I think it's not something we need to worry about. And we especially don't need to worry about this because we're good at set pieces now, Bardi. We're the set piece team.
We are good at set pieces. It was there was a bit of a confusion why Son was taking all the corners instead of Perisic, who delivered some beauties against Chelsea. But it worked nicely for us. And it was a good old stooping header to flick it on. It was quite nice. It's quite a nice corner.
Do you think that was an under-hit Son corner, yeah, which Perisic made something of, or do you think it was deliberate?
It was a definite jazz improvisation vibe on that, for sure.
Mm-hmm. But that
wasn't my impression, but I want to go back and watch before I put too many chips on
I mean,
that.
I think what certainly was not improvised was the way we got Kane free in the box.
Yes.
There's no debate about that. Yes. That's something we've seen, not just Kane, but other players, we've seen several times already this season. You know, managing to draw defenders away and leave players essentially free at the back post.
If it was rehearsed, I just don't think it would be that low. He would have gone a little bit higher. I think he'd underhit it for sure.
So perhaps it was the intention, but the execution was a little off. But Perisic made the most of it anyway, because he's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So 35 more 1-0s with goals from corners.
You know me, I'm all for 1-0s. I'm upset it's already gone, the possibility. But if we could do the rest of the season 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, I'd be well up for that.
Mm.
As 1-0s go, they have been pretty entertaining one, right? It's it's not just score early and then park the bus and is
but
boring,
I really think that this is just early season Spurs. We're not quite there yet in terms of our fitness. Sure. I think once everything clicks, once Son clicks, I think we're going to be absolutely fine. There's nothing to worry about, and the main thing is we've got over the line in 2 out of our 3 games, and we got a crucial draw in the other one, which means we're 7 points up on the points from last season, despite not having played particularly well in 2 out of our 3 games. That's a nice place to be.
It's kind of just, it's very Spursy in the sense that we're being down on what we're doing because of what others are doing. Arsenal have walked through their first 3 games.
I'm not paying a second's thought.
No, but it's a factor. It's a factor out there to the general consensus. Mm. Had they drawn a game or two, then we would be thinking exactly like you just said, we're up on points from last year. But they've just smashed a load of trash, and it's affecting everybody's mood.
Yeah, they have weaknesses in the same way we have weaknesses, and they will be exposed at some point.
And they're going to fall hard, right? They're too high, 100%. And they're going to come crashing down.
100%. Jonathan, who actually asked a couple of questions, one of them about Bentancur, and I think we kind of covered that. But he says, do you expect Conte's substitution patterns to change once we start playing twice a week? And if so, how? So it was quite interesting, I thought, that Conte only made 3 out of 5 substitutions, and he didn't make any until the 75th minute when he brought Sessegnon and Richarlison on. And then he brought Basuma on a little later. What do you make of that?
It's a full 10 minutes after the goal.
Hmm. Didn't feel like Conte to me. Like, we're expecting both wing-backs replaced on 60 minutes every game. And
yeah,
we saw one replaced on 75. Who's returned from injury.
I wonder if in this particular game he, first of all, was chasing the game and didn't want to change anything that way, right? Because they just had their halftime instructions and things have changed there. And then he wants to see what the game looks like after Spurs are one up, right? Are Wolves going to push up and leave themselves vulnerable? Can we get Son a goal and change him around, you know? Let's take it, because it's a very different game. Every Conte game is very, very different after the first goal. So maybe he wanted a glance at that first, and then by then there's not that much to be done. Maybe he could have just, you know, made 4 at once on the 76th minute or whatever. But we only saw 4 in total against Chelsea. So at this rate, it will be none in a few weeks' time, right? Interesting.
I just think the 60-minute substitution at Tottenham is so ingrained into our mindset. It's something that we've been living with for the last 8 years or so. It's like my dog. It gets to 5 o'clock and the dog is like, it's dinner time. It's not even hungry. I could have fed it at 4 o'clock, and it gets to 5. It's like, oh, it's dinner time. And I think we're just so used to Pochettino making his 60-minute subs, and it's just something that we always look to. 59 minutes. Oh, he hasn't made a sub yet. What's going on? You've got to see. Every game is different. It's not playing piano by, what do you call it? By You know, you get those guitar books and it tells you how to play the guitar. It's not musical notes, it's just
tablature,
yeah. And every game is different, so you got to see what's happening. And we've mentioned vibes 3 or 4 times now. You've got to listen to the vibes, man, see which way the game is going and play it that way.
Yeah, for sure. The promising thing I would say is that all the subs had a nice impact. I thought Sessegnon looked really nice and fresh. Richarlison obviously had a big impact coming on, driving forward. And Bissouma too looked nice when he came on in midfield. It worked out pretty well.
I just got pinged on Discord. Apparently in his video, I'm guessing today, Ali Gold mentioned that Vio is only working on attacking set pieces and not defensive ones, which is interesting. And not entirely shocking.
No,
well,
based on what we've seen.
Shocking as in you wouldn't guess it, but based on what we've seen, right? We've used the same defensive setup as we did at the end of last season without any changes. And also, in more simple terms, we've been phenomenal from attacking set pieces, and we've let one in and maybe looked a little vulnerable outside of that too defensively. I wonder if that's just for the time being. I wonder if it's, hey, I can make a difference on attacking set pieces. Let's do that for now, and then later down the line, we'll do defensive ones when I have more time. But what you've definitely seen is very different looks game to game on attacking set pieces, right? That flick on from front to back is a classic among set piece coaches, but not what we'd seen previously so much, I think. So it looks very... And this is the benefit... I will try to finish a whole sentence. This is the benefit of having a dedicated set piece coach. It's like Conte's a very, very smart man, in especially in football circumstances, right? But it's about the dedication of time. He is already a workaholic. He's already putting in insane hours and levels of dedication. To have someone whose whole job is to say, hey, we've got Wolves coming up next week, I'm going to watch them defend their last 80 corners and pick apart all of the patterns and all of the tendencies and look for the holes and then devise 2 or 3 different plans for how to do that and then how to turn those plans into a coaching session. It's about time and mental dedication. And so for us to keep coming up with, because I did it again, because you can go back to when I've done previous set piece videos where it's like, oh, we're doing some set pieces under Mourinho. Oh, we're doing some set pieces under Pochettino, and that's great. And for 4 weeks, we threaten from them and we score a handful of goals, and then it stops because we stop training them, or because teams are, that's our set piece now for the rest of the season and the season after that, and teams are prepared for that. But to have someone whose sole role is to change what we're doing every week, one training session before a game, here's some set pieces, and look what he's doing for us. Arguably 4 points from that, from one training session a week. What is everyone doing? What were we doing before this? Money on the table.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
We are delighted to be partnered with Athletic Greens, and I shall once again hand over to my my sidekick and best friend.
So I started taking AG1 to improve my health, and each week I've spoken about something related to the supplement. But today I want to talk about the big D, vitamin D. Athletic Greens, Athletic Greens, vitamin D3 plus K2. Windy, do you know why it's essential to get a hit of D every day?
No, I don't know why it's essential to get a hit of D every day. Why is it essential?
Vitamin D is essential for your bones and calcium absorption. Normally the UK is pretty cloudy, and getting vitamin D from food is tough. So adding it to your diet is important. AG1 comes with a little bottle and a dropper of vitamin D, so it's easy to top up your levels. If you're training like I am, being topped up with vitamin D reduces risk of injury, improves muscle health, and aids recovery. So if AG1, think of AG1 as Perisic flicking on the corner. Adding a drop of AG Greens vitamin D3 and K2 is like Harry Kane at the back post, just tapping it in. So just tap it into your smoothie every morning.
Oh, beautiful stuff, Bardi. Beautiful stuff. So Athletic Greens was created when the founder had some gut health issues and ended up on a complicated supplement routine, which cost him $100 a day. So he figured out something that could do that for him for a lot cheaper. Tons of people do take some kind of multivitamin, but it's important to choose one with high quality ingredients that your body will actually absorb. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/extrainch. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/extrainch to take ownership of your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Bardi, I saw you on Nathan's video talking Hjoibjerg.
It was nice to do one of these videos finally and get an idea behind it and just see breaking down the moments in isolation. It was eye-opening.
I thought your observations were excellent throughout. I didn't agree with some of your conclusions, mm-hmm. but really, really good stuff. It was fascinating to get the insight of you and Nathan. Some really astute observations, I thought.
I just think it's important because I know it's become a bit of a meme now, and it's just something that has stuck with me, that Bardi thinks Hjoibjerg is a cement mixer. And It's funny. It's
funny.
He does upset me and he does annoy me. And I was really, I'm surprised we didn't go into it. And I was really disappointed with him on Saturday. But there's more to my disappointment, and there's reasons for it, that he's a fine player, as I spoke about that in the video. And I think it's probably a question later on. But yeah, become a patron and watch the video.
Windy, how much do you want from Real Madrid?
For Hjoibjerg, given that we don't need to sell and they've just sold a 30-year-old to Manchester United for 80 million. I want 80 million.
You're not going to get that.
Then no deal, you know? There's why would we sell our first choice best midfielder for anything less than 80 million at this stage?
Because we can get a substantial overpay if it's 40 or 50 million, because we could turn that into a different option of player to the one that we've got, who could be an upgrade on Hjoibjerg on the ball, even if not off.
But what if they ended up not being an upgrade?
then we've still got Bissouma, Bentancur, and Skip to rotate through.
No, I get it. I mean, I just think it's a bad idea to sell, and clearly it's not for sale.
It's late in the window. It's not convenient, but my ears are open to a ludicrous offer.
I think the other thing about Hjoibjerg is that he's a big character. He's a big part of the squad. You don't want to lose someone like that when you're just starting a season really strongly. It would be absolute insanity. Player of the match on Saturday?
No, he wasn't. He was player of the match according to Jermaine Genus, who's the worst kind of... If he was on Catchphrase, he'd be like, say what you see. He'd just be repeating the things that are on the screen. The last 10 minutes, Hjoibjerg had a pretty solid 10 minutes, did a lovely run to the corner flag, and then got the crowd all riled up. But that's all Genus remembers. He's an idiot. The actual Spurs fan base, proper coys, they went and voted Perisic. So all these vanilla accounts out there taking shots at me, don't. Get your facts right. And it's player of the match, not man of the match as well.
That is correct. It is player of the match now. I thought he played well. I thought he had a good game. I thought the choice for player of the match could have been any one of Hjoibjerg, Kulusevski, Perisic, and probably Emerson Royale, to be honest. I thought he had a tidy game as well.
No, we haven't talked about him, have we?
I thought he was really, really tidy.
He is also starting a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm desperate for Spence to come in at some point. I think I really like the effort that Emerson Royale is putting in. I think he's a very solid defender. I think he is okay on transitions. I think he's a little weak in the final third. I think Spence will absolutely revolutionise our right-hand side, but obviously it's so early for him. He's got to learn the system. He's got to show that he can compete with, you know, Premier League players as opposed to Championship players. So I'm all for him being brought through slowly across the season. I kind of like the approach that Conte's taken with him, to be honest, but I'm expecting big things from him in the second half of the season.
He's incredibly enthusiastic. I don't think I've seen a player that happy just to be playing. And there's always a moment when he'll do a back heel or something, and you could see there's just a pause, and then he does it, and then he's just like, "Yeah, I did it," and he's really happy.
He's so likable. He's such a likable guy, isn't he, Emerson? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a fan. I'm a fan. Nathan, you did a Pape Matar Sarr video.
Yeah, ages back, and we forgot to talk about it. And
It was good. It was really good.
Thank you. Yeah, we didn't do a dive. We forgot we got distracted by a different bit of content or something, but I just wanted to, because there are some people who only consume the podcast and don't see tweets or whatever, so I just wanted to mention there's a SAR video in case you're interested.
Yeah, and I would say SAR, so it did change my perspective on SAR a little bit, because I'd kind of watched him in preseason and I thought he was really smooth, and I didn't sort of notice any major technical flaws. And actually, I don't want to give the video away, but you did highlight there's some clunkiness there. Some of it reminded me a little bit of Moussa Sissoko, to be honest.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I can see what you're saying.
Yeah. So at the moment, we do have an offer on our Patreon. So we've temporarily, for the next week, turned on the maximum discount for annual subscriptions. That's 16% off annual subscriptions. So if you were thinking of turning your monthly sub into an annual sub, then now is the right time to do it. If you've never given it a go and you kind of like the sound of what we're talking about here, then by all means, sign up, binge the videos in a month and unsubscribe immediately. And you've paid nothing for a hell of a lot of content. We'd love to have you over on our Patreon, patreon.com/theextrainch. Next up is Nottingham Forest. It's really hard to know what to expect from them because they basically signed a whole new team. Any observations so far, Nathan, from Forest?
They're playing a sort of 3-4-1-2, I guess you would call it. I like Awoni. He was on my list of backup forward options. They've obviously brought in a bunch of players. It's a meme. I don't know who is reasonably actually going to be in contention to get into the starting 11 or anything like that. I haven't watched them really.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to know what
they
to
drew
expect.
With the worst team in the country last week. I don't know. That's it. That's all I got.
They've got some really good attacking players. You know, I've spoken about my admiration for Gibbs White before. I think he's a good player. I think Emmanuel Dennis was very impressive for Watford last year. He's a dangerous player for sure. Brennan Johnson's good. So, and like you say, good forward as well. So there are players to trouble us. But you would also expect some bedding in time, some time for the players to get to know one another before they really explode. So we're probably paying them a good time, I would say. It's worked out fairly well.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a good time to play them before they are settled. I think it's one of those games, I think if we go 1-0 down, it could be really difficult.
Mm. Sebastian says, what positions do you think we need to win the league? I feel we're a forward and defender away from having a trophy-winning team. Curious what you guys think. And I kind of, I wanted to talk about this question this week in particular, because we've seen dropped points from our rivals. And I've consistently said that Spurs need to put themselves in a position as the third best team where they are ready to pounce if either of the teams above us stutter at all. I do think there's an opportunity. I think there's City are a ridiculously good team and will probably piss the league. But what if they don't? let's give ourselves a chance. And there is some time left in the window for a little bit more business. Nathan, what do you think are the key areas that you would like to see strengthened in the remaining days of the transfer window?
An additional right-footed centre-back.
Who might that be?
So I did a very quick turnaround list, not on a spreadsheet or anything, and I wanted to go for younger understudy-type players. So Max Lacroix, 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 Gonzalo Inacio, Loic Bade, kind of looking for players who can play the right-sided role and maybe the central role, like who could cover both and be understudies to both and see the pitch that way. Players who still have rawness, who still have downside, who are still uncertain, who would take a while to adapt, I think. I have to acknowledge with all of these, because we can't go out and spend 50 million on a backup, right? And maybe some of these guys are getting towards that price just because they're like high potential players. What I'm trying to say here is that I think it's a difficult one. I think it's a difficult spot. So I'm not like too livid at the club that they haven't just gone out and done that. Like, it's an easy thing to do. Especially if you want that cover for two different roles, which I think Davinson Sanchez definitely can do defensively. Definitely can't do offensively. So it's a bit of a unicorn, but I think it's doable. Maybe I'll look more into it.
If the question were to win the league, which centre back do you sign? So like not looking at sort of the young guys that are a bit flawed and would be back up. To win the league, which centre back do you sign? So we're talking now, maybe they've replaced Dyer, they're not just the understudy to Dyer. Who are you thinking?
To replace Dyer, give me 1 second.
I mean, just throwing a name out there who is going to cost an absolute fortune, but I think is so good. Mark Gaye, I think he's an unbelievable...
I don't think you can play him central.
No?
You could. So again, even if you're not looking at prospects for this role, even if you want a finished product, there's still not a ton of players, I think. I spent a while looking for left-footers. Maybe I could look better for right-footers, right? There's players who like league more one way. So Mark Gaye is like super aggressive, and I think that would be difficult to play him in the central role. You've got players like John Stones who really suited to the central role, wide role they can do, definitely on the ball, I think. Maybe not a perfect fit off ball. There's one player who can definitely play central and can definitely play wide, called Kim Min-jae. But there's question marks over general level of ability there. I think he's good, but it's still a gamble. Anyway.
He's gone.
Gone? Yeah, did he move? Oh, where did he go?
Napoli.
Oh, I missed that. Okay.
Scored today.
Never mind.
I got kind of excited about him. There's a report about him, and I went back and watched loads of tape, and I really, really liked Kim Min-jae. I think he's like Harry Maguire when Harry Maguire was good.
Harry Maguire is good.
Why don't we inquire for Harry Maguire?
About Chelsea have done.
He would be a really solid more. Signing.
Jonathan Tarr at Leverkusen, okay. I think would be a potential. He'd be expensive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a peak age. Mm-hmm. He's older than our current options. would definitely directly contend mm-hmm. with Dyer, and I think could probably do the wide mm-hmm. role too.
Nice. Really impressed with the Wolves centre-backs, by the way. Both Collins and Kilman, both highly competent in possession. I mean, Kilman is an excellent carrier. Collins is an excellent passer. That's a nice blend for them.
Kilman isn't the worst idea.
Left-footed, though.
Plays left side. Wait, no. Hang on. He plays left side and... he's very left-footed. I don't know why I imagined something else.
It's because Gaye is right-footed and plays on the left.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'm getting them mixed up. I think you're right.
Yeah. Bardi, any other positions you'd like to see us strengthen?
I'd like us to sign a third midfielder, someone so we could play a 3-5-2. Someone a bit different, someone who... that's why I wouldn't be against selling Højbjerg for 40, 50 million and then reinvesting that in someone who could play in a three with Bissouma and Bentancur or something. So I'd like a third midfielder. Stop shaking your head, Wendy. You asked me my opinion. Now you're shaking your head at my opinion.
I downvote that comment.
Okay.
What about the Kulusevski understudy? It seems like Brian Hill wants to leave and Conte is willing to let him leave, but won't do so without replacing him first.
Oh, yeah. We're linked with that. We haven't talked about him. How do you say his name?
Milanovsky?
Yes. Close enough. Yeah. So he... already plays the substitute role for Atalanta. Did we talk about him on the previous pod? I don't know that we did.
No, we didn't.
Okay, all right. So he already plays the substitute role very, very well. Okay. He is a super, what's the word I want here? Like adventurous, very risk-taking player. He reminds me a lot
of
Bruno Fernandes. Yeah, every time he tries shit. So it's either a long shot or it's a... like disguised through ball, basically. Or he's a good dribbler too, but then that's just to set up a through ball or a long shot, right? Is he 29?
He's 29.
Like
Malinovsky.
That? Yeah.
Malinovsky, not Malinovsky.
Malinovsky.
Yeah, I think he's really good, and I think that he's good for the role. The only fear would be his super directness, but maybe that's what you want from the guy who comes off the bench with Kulusevski, is to just immediately try things. I guess if you're seeing out a win, you might ask him to do something different, and that might be difficult. But outside of that, I think that he is just a really good technical player. Left-footed, plays mostly inside right. Has played, actually more than has played, plays a bit of three-man midfield, and therefore could give us that option.
But then we thought that about Kulusevski. Yeah. And it just hasn't happened.
But unlike, whereas I think Kulusevski could do that role, he does. Okay. He does do that role, right? So there's a bit of a difference there. I think it makes a lot of sense. I also think that you could just play Brian Hill, but
yeah,
this is an upgrade.
Yeah, I do.
In terms of now, this sure. is an upgrade.
I don't like his age profile. He has just scored this evening for Atalanta, but it's his age profile that puts me off.
That is the other thing. I think at this point, we're getting quite old. Mm. Yeah, we've added a lot of now players, mm-hmm. and I think you have to do that to an extent. It's something that I have underplayed in the past in terms of buying pitch-ready players, right? Players who are going to win the next match. We've done a bit of that now, and I think that you can definitely go too far with that. So that's 1 point for Hill, I think there. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we could stumble into Brian Hill having a good season by just not getting that player over the line and then having to use him. Because I feel like Hill is a very talented player who's just sort of bubbling under and ready for a breakout. But you're right that he, Malinovsky, would be an instant sort of, yes, he's good to go immediately. Whereas Hill might need to feel his way in for a quarter of a season first, perhaps in some of the lesser games. So it would make a lot of sense. So Leonardo Doseretz said, after listening to Bardi's defence of his Højbjerg is rubbish, Hill, G-I-L, I found myself once again comparing our beloved Højbjerg to shiny new toy Ben 10. While their skill sets are fairly similar, I thought Ben 10 was going to be more technical and a better passer than Højbjerg. That hasn't been the case, in my opinion. He is perhaps a bit tidier, and I admit he's a better dribbler, but he hasn't been much more influential in attack and is not quite as sturdy a defender as Højbjerg. Do you have a different read on this? Is it still too early in his Spurs career to tell if he has room for improvement? Who do you think are the two starting central midfielders in big matches down the stretch? So we ought to let Bardi respond first, as it's kind of in response to him.
Yeah, so I think that's fair. I think we haven't seen as much attacking output from Bentancur as I would have liked or as I expected. I tipped him to have a big season this year. We haven't quite seen it yet. I think he's been good in parts. I thought he was really good in the second half. Yeah, so it's one of those things that I'm getting told off for criticising Højbjerg and then looking at Bentancur and he's not doing anything similar. He's not doing anything better. And I don't think that's something that you can use to disprove my Højbjerg theory. Anyway, because a lot of time we praise Højbjerg for things he should be doing and for like it's like complimenting someone for not smelling of body odor. Højbjerg does the simple things well, but I would expect any professional footballer of an international level to do what Højbjerg does perfectly well.
I have a condition, isn't it?
I think Højbjerg gets so much credit for doing very little. I haven't seen a Spurs player in my lifetime with that kind of easy credit. I do think Bentancur tries to be a little bit more, and I think the ceiling is a lot higher on Bentancur. I just don't think Højbjerg doesn't get any better. This is him maxed out. This is him in fifth gear, pedal to the floor at 71 miles an hour. You're not going to overtake anybody with him. I think he can be sold. Real Madrid want to spend 50 million. Let's take that 50 million and then spend it. A lot of the criticism is, well, we won't spend it wisely. Why not? We seem to be spending wisely at the moment. So I trust us with 50 million. I trust Paratici and Conte to spend that money wisely. Yeah, I know Bentancur hasn't been great, but his ceiling is much higher than Højbjerg.
I think he has been pretty great, to be honest, considering he's, you know, Bentancur. I think
he has been, but
things considered, in terms of like, you know, joining a new league and instantly hitting the ground running, I don't think Bentancur is a fabulous footballer. I think he is like a solid 7 out of 10 footballer. He is so the characterization I think you give Bentancur is that he's a better passer than Højbjerg. I don't see that. I think he's a much safer, he's more risk averse. He's very good at changing the angle of attack. He's very good at just moving the ball side to side, and there's definitely a place for that in the team. Whereas Højbjerg, I think, is the much more progressive. I mean, he is the more progressive passer. The data says that he's the more progressive passer. He just is, and the eye test agrees. But the thing that, and I forgot to say this in my last pod, so I tweeted it after. The thing that really impresses me about Højbjerg is he goes from volume passing, volume passing, volume passing, volume passing. You know, he's 92nd percentile for passes attempted out of central midfielders in the top five leagues. And yet somehow he then goes, wow, I'm just going to play an immaculate through ball to Kane, out of nowhere. And it's not like he's trying those all the time, but he kind of hits the mark on them. And your point in the video, I'm spoiling the video a little bit, is he's really good when he's not pressed. And I agree. Yes. I think he's really good when he's not pressed. But that's when he picks his moments to play the passes. And I think that's a really good sort of self-awareness from Hojbjerg. He knows when to just keep the ball, maintain possession, not try anything too risky. And when he's got a moment, he'll do something actually quite special. We've seen him chip really nice passes over the top for unrushing players. We've seen him play kind of through balls. I've not seen that quite so much from Bentancur, and I'm not saying that's a problem because I think they complement each other quite well. And I'll also say that Bentancur's pressing, when it's good, is really, really good.
It's better than Hojbjerg's. I swear to God, there's a difference of seeing Hojbjerg live, because I watch this guy live and I come out of there angry with him because he's not moving around the pitch. He's not offering angles. He's got great pass percentage. He stands next to Dier, picks the ball up, passes it to Dier, or passes it into midfield and gets it back. So he's got great pass percentage because of the passes that he does. And yes, they're progressive because they're 2 yards forwards, but it's in his own half and it comes straight back to him. But he's off the ball, he's horrendous. Turning back and getting chasing the ball down, he's not very good. And I think his tackling is weak. And he's just a meh. He's got a good long pass. When he's given him time, he'll chip it in, Tiger Woods, chip it over the top and he's fine. Given time, he's got a nice sandwich. But I think under pressure, he cracks. Against faster teams, he can't cope with it. And he's just an all-round fine player. I mean, he's a good player. Had he been around Spurs 90 in the 90s, I would think he's our greatest ever centre midfielder. But he's not. He's at an age where we need a little bit more from that role. And I just don't think there's any more juice to squeeze out of him. So if Real Madrid want him, sell him.
Nathan, intervene.
He is consistently in the 90-plus percentile for ball progression measured in total distance rather than just accounting individual passes forward. He outshines Bentancur in that regard. I meant to put it in the video. I meant to, because I had the match statistics on ball progression from that video, and he was second, I think, behind Dier. I don't know, and yet you watch him and you do get that unease, but as I talked about in the video, I think that could be an aesthetic thing. I'm just repeating what I said in the video, and I'm reluctant to do that.
That's fine. Bardi's grown up watching these really kind of classy, elegant, flamboyant Italian midfielders who receive the ball into feet immaculately. They don't need a second touch to get it out of their feet. They take it on the half turn and they just move the ball forward with ease. They're just kind of, the ball's gliding off both feet. And so watching a player like Hojbjerg, who the end result is the same, but the process for getting there is different, is an affront to Bardi. And that's that I think is the crux of it. I think you have to what you need to do is close your eyes every time he receives the ball and then open again once he's moved the ball on.
You know what you are, Windy? You're the kind of person that when they have a pancake, uses a fish slice to flip it instead of just flicking it into the air. I like my things tossed and a bit of fucking pizzazz around it. I don't want it just turned over with no wow.
Quick fire round. I don't know how familiar you are with each of these players, but would you swap Hojbjerg for Fabian Ruiz?
Yes.
No.
Ezequiel Palacios?
Don't know.
Okay. Rodrigo De Paul?
Just because of the surname, yeah.
Okay. Maxime Lopez?
Don't know.
Ishmael Benassa?
Yeah. I'd swap him for him. Yeah. I'd swap him for Tonali as well. I know you wouldn't, but I'd swap him for Tonali.
No, dear God, no. Fucking hell. Benassa has a publicly reported £15 million release clause.
Let's do it.
Just saying, in case anyone's listening.
I think we have to say that is the last we're going to talk about Pierre-Emile Hojbjerg on this podcast for some weeks, unless he scores again next week or gets sent off.
Until we tell him to Real
Madrid. Exactly.
Then stop indirecting me on Twitter, Windy.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Bardi, and our tactics guy, Nate Clark. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/theextrainch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review, and most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the ex-subs, we love every single last one of you, and of course, come on you Spurs.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.